The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
December 7th. A day that will live in infamy. Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor in 1941. And today, December 7th, 2017, Al Franken will show the world what it looks like to be thrown under the bus. Now, to be clear, Al Franken deserves every bit of what he's getting. Character matters. Franken clearly doesn't deserve the title of the United States Senator. Call me old-fashioned, but I don't think groping and fondling women against their will is conduct befit a senator or even a man. An immoral man won't suddenly become moral just because, you know, his secret has been outed. He can't just sit in front of a mirror and say, you know, look, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me, and wait for the ethics committee to declare no harm, no foul. However, Franken is clearly the sacrificial lamb here. Do I doubt the suddenly, you know, newly found scruples of the Democrats? Yeah, I do. I do think there is a change going on. But when it comes to the people in Washington, yeah, I don't buy it at all. Franken's announcement was conveniently chosen a full day after a whole slew of Democrats called for his retirement. The intent was clearly to allow a good portion of the party to be able to say, hey, you know, this guy is really bad. We decided to do the right thing for women and America. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, but if you're really sincere, you cared about the safety of women, you would have done this after the first woman came forward, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. You would have done this with Bill Clinton. We're now up to 6 women. I don't think this was for safety of women or for morality at all. What this was made for is to drive a stake and say we're the party of, while the Republicans are driving a stake into their own hearts. What made this even more convenient is it all comes just a couple of days after Republicans en masse decided to start endorsing Roy Moore. What are you doing? The motive for this announcement today is clear. Franken is thrown under the bus as a sacrificial lamb to regain the moral high ground that they have been losing since September. Moral high ground that they haven't had since Bill Clinton was in office. But the way the GOP is handling things, the left will not only own the moral high ground, they'll be entrenched and fortified with concrete bunkers, and we're going to be the bad guys. Oh my gosh. This is what happens when you abandon principles. It's absolutely justified to have Franken step down, but it's also justifiable to call the left out for their motivation here. Regardless, the Democrats' intention, if the GOP does not begin to focus on character, if they continue to handle things like Roy Moore the same, they can kiss the moral high ground goodbye. Character actually matters. And those in the GOP, you better start remembering that. Otherwise, December 7th, 2017, will be known as your new day of infamy.
It's Thursday, December 7th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I really want to talk about this because there is something that is partially sincere that is happening with the left. I think the closer you get to Washington, the less sincere it becomes. But I think there is something to be said. And you know what's amazing? You know what's really amazing? Is in some ways what happened in the 1960s, where the Republicans were the ones who were, they were always the ones standing up for civil rights. Always, always, always. And somehow or another, they switched sides all of a sudden. What happened? because the Dixiecrats became Republicans. That's the story. So these guys who were the Dixiecrats, they go over to the Republican side. And the Republicans, after being for 100 and some years, after being the ones that were always for equal rights, they were always for, you know, no two water fountains. This is insanity. All of a sudden, they lost. And they look like the bad guys. That's happening to us right now. Right now. Why? Have you read what Al Franken has said? Al Franken has said, the people who are accusing him said that he has actually said the words, you know, I'm famous. I'm famous. This is just, you know, some of the perks of being famous. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
I heard that and I thought, wow, that sounds, I don't know, exactly like Al Franken when we saw him at the airport in 2004.
Exactly right. I thought two things. One, the airport. I've heard that from him before. We were standing in the airport and it was a huge line and everything was delayed.
Yeah, 2004, Iowa caucuses.
Yep, and everybody was trying to get out. And I mean, I'm standing there with, you know, NBC News and everybody else, everybody along with people who are just trying to get out of Iowa that day. The entire airport is swamped and everybody's mixed together, celebrities and non-celebrities.
They let the regulars near the celebrities.
It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And Al Franken is in the line in front of me and he actually leans across the table and he says, look, there's got to be some sort of, correct me if I'm wrong.
Surely. There must be.
Some system.
Mechanism,
yes. Surely there must be some mechanism for people like me. The person behind the counter said, what do you mean? No.
It's a freaking airport. It's an airport. Security like everybody else.
Yeah, what are you talking about? No, there's not. So we've seen that before. He has placed himself outside of the general population. We've seen that. But we also have heard that on a bus with Billy Bush. So I thought of two things. I remember Al Franken saying that. But I also remember the president of the United States saying something like that.
So how are you? Give me your. Why is it so similar?
Why is it so similar? Mm-hmm. Because Al Franken said it's one of the perks. I can grab you wherever I want. And Donald Trump said, hey, it's just one of the perks. I can grab them wherever I want.
It's interesting. I mean, I think, you know, Trump was more of a, I'm a celebrity, so women will want me, and they're not going to say, no, I'm the man.
They'll let you do whatever you want.
They'll let you do whatever you want. Not necessarily, I mean, you know, you could argue, obviously, it means that he's going to go grab everybody and no one's going to ever stop him. But it struck me as more of like, I'm the man. Yeah, and women are always going to say yes to me because I'm so great. Like, it was a braggadocious sort of way of talking about how he could go up to any celebrity and they'd all be into him, right? Where Franken is more saying that, like, it's, I get it. I am excused from my behavior because I am a celebrity. Not that people are going to be into it. It's just you can't do anything because I'm important. So I did see that a little bit of a shade of difference there, but I mean,
maybe
still neither one
here's
is
the
ideal,
thing,
as they both admitted.
Whether it's true or not, one side is rejecting it and one side is embracing it. One side tolerated it, but now with Roy Moore, I mean, you know, it's not 2015 anymore. And it's certainly not 1965. Now with Roy Moore, I'm telling you, I am really concerned. As I looked at this yesterday, I've already thought, what does it mean to be a conservative? What does it mean to be a Republican? And I decided I'm not a Republican. But I'm telling you, this is changing everything. Let me explain. Let me switch gears.
Okay.
And I want to come back to the sexual harassment thing with because the John Conyers story is unbelievable. Have you seen what came out about John Conyers?
I've seen way too much of John Conyers in the past.
Wow.
In my brain the past few weeks.
It's unbelievable what's coming out about him. So let's come back to what the Democrats are doing with the perception of they're all for women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And with specifically with Bill Clinton at a very low cost,
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at the media. Remember when this first happened, I said, don't make the mistakes left. Don't make the mistakes that we made. And one of them was, you won't, if you push so hard, you're not going to get people to listen to you. Okay? If you just, if you become a birther in your own way, you will separate yourself and there will be no coming back from it. What has happened to us, according to this new study, the right has become much more willing to go down conspiratorial lanes. And in the last year, they are becoming more and more pushed to the edge of the fringe. Okay, so we're becoming more radical if you're on the right. This is due to, you know, according to a new study. What's happening on the left? On the left, the Trump administration has made the media more credible. More people who consider themselves Democrats believe the media than they did before. And I noticed yesterday when we were talking about it was the Washington Post last week that did a couple of things. And then who was it? Oh, ABC News. Remember when the news director in Washington, D.C. just read them the riot act and went into the newsroom and there is a tape of it. Somebody had recorded and he was just you've done more damage by going on television and having what's his name?
Brian Ross.
Brian Ross. Say this. You've been done more damage to ABC and you've done more damage to the news industry than Donald Trump could ever do. I've talked to you about this over and over again. What are we doing? You're just destroying us. You've got to be right. You don't have to be first. You have to be right. And he really read them the riot act. And I read that and I thought, OK, for the wrong motivation, you know, their motivation of being accurate is just because they want to stop Donald Trump. But at least they are now trying to toe the line. It'll end as soon as their guy gets in.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to toe the line because they know their credibility is at stake. Well, that is making an impression with liberals. And so now liberals are being driven right into the arms of the media. While the media is trying to be more credible at the same time, granted, you know, you could say with their only goal of trying to get rid of Donald Trump, they are trying to be fact driven because they know they've got to have their case buttoned up because the world is watching. Okay. We're getting further and further apart and we're getting further and further apart on reality. Now the world is, and America is changed. America has changed over the last six months. And it has everything to do with men being abusive. And are we truly as a group of people, conservatives, who are the ones who stood up and said, no, this is wrong what is happening. We've always been the ones standing up and saying, no, the national organization only is representing political point of views. What about listening to the women here? We're now going to lose that? Why? We're going to lose that because we think it's more important to hold on to power. When we come back, I want to share with you what people are saying on Capitol Hill. The Democrats are saying on Capitol Hill about Al Franken. The Democrats are now saying the only way to win is to actually stick to principles. The Democrats are saying that. We are about to have a bloodbath for a very long period of time, and you're about to lose everybody. if we don't go back to principles. When you book your next trip, your business trip, make sure you use Upside.com. And here's why. They're going to give you two great gifts this holiday season. The first is a free pair of Bose SoundLink wireless headphones so you can have some peace and quiet on your business trip. And the second is the gift of better business travel experience. Upside has customer service specialists who look out for you every step of the way on your business trip, handling any problem that might pop up. I'm going to be real honest with you. I talked to the inventor or the creator of Upside just recently, a couple of weeks ago, and he said, Glenn, we found an amazing thing. People would, because they were offering, you know, the money, if you know, you book your travel, you get a low price and then you get money. They said, what we found is when we started really getting good with customer service, people wanted that more than anything else, because these are the guys who have been, you know, traveling around, you know, your woman who's, you know, getting on a flight three times a week and you're flying around and nobody cares about you. And, you know, in the holidays or in with the weather, the plane is canceled or it's delayed and nobody is making sure that you're going to get home on time. So they said, that's the market. The people really, really want somebody who's watching over them all the time. Well, that's what Upside does. They monitor your business trip around the clock, proactively keeping you posted on everything from the weather in the city you're going to changing your flight home so you can adjust your meeting schedule. All of that. Plus, Upside has great prices for flights and hotels and rental cars. Plus, you're going to get something out of it, too, a gift. So book your first business trip at upside.com/back, and the Bose Wireless SoundLink headphones are yours for free. Headphones available while supplies last. It has to be your first Upside purchase. $600 minimum purchase is required, but you are going to be treated like gold. See the site for complete details. It's upside.com. Upside.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There is the Franken accusers. Another one has come out. And the Franken accusers are changing the party. They're changing the Democratic Party. This woman said, I assumed Franken would step down later that day. The Tweeden's story had rung true to me. I told myself I was the only one. I had been groped by Franken in 2009. It happened at a Media Matters party during Obama's first inauguration. And she said she had been married for 2 years at the time. I saw Al Franken. I only bug celebrities for pictures when it'll make my foster mom happy. She loves Franken, so I asked to get a picture with him. We posed for the shot. He immediately put his hand on my waist, grabbing a handful of flesh. I froze. Then he squeezed at least twice. I don't let my husband touch me like that in public because I believe it diminishes me as a professional woman. Al Franken's familiarity is inappropriate and unwanted. It was also quick. He knew exactly what he was doing. It shrunk me. I felt like I was no longer a person or only an ornament. No matter, you don't matter, and I do. He wanted to cop a feel, and he demonstrated that he didn't need my permission. Now, she comes out, and she didn't want to come out because she thought, you know, he would just, you know, resign when others did. And so now she's added her voice to this. I want you to hear what she writes about what's happening in the Democratic Party today. And it is the same thing that was happening under Bill Clinton. Washington Post headline, I'm a feminist. I study rape culture and I don't want Al Franken to resign. In it, it was the argument that Steinem wrote 20 years ago. These are our guys. We have to protect them because there's a risk one of them will be replaced by a Republican. If we set this precedent in the interest of demonstrating our party's solidarity with harassed and abused women, we're only going to drain the swamp of people who, however flawed, still regularly vote to protect women's rights and women's freedoms. Now, it's easy for us to say, that's crazy. Why don't you get somebody who's not abusing women? But this is the same argument, and not even on women, but on other issues that the left and the right have been making, the parties have been making to the American people for a long time. She starts to go into Bill Clinton and what's coming for Bill Clinton. And I think she's right. More in a second.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Now, there's another thing that we have to talk about today, and that is Bitcoin. If you put some money in Bitcoin, I'm sure you're watching it, but it just flipped to 16,000 per coin.
My Twitter feeds and Facebook feeds are filled with people who are like, many people who said, hey, I was listening to you guys when it hit 7,000 and I thought I was too late, but I put some money in and now I've more than doubled it. Stuff like that. And a lot of people who are like, hey, I remember you talking about it when it was 1,100 and it's now 16,000. And in the last year, I could have made 16 times my money if I pulled it out today. And you could go back to people who'd heard us talking about it in 2014 and 2015.
Shut up. I hate those people.
When it was
when we were saying,
two,
you know,
three,
what,
$400.
You should put money in that.
And then, you know, some people not doing it.
Like us.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's
I got in at 1,100 and, you know, I was telling you to put money into it, you know, around 100. So stupid of me, but it's growing. It's making me very uncomfortable right now. But we'll explain why coming up in a minute. There's a new futures market that is opening up on Sunday, and we'll tell you all about that coming up in a little while. And we're going to do a lot on it for television. We're going to explain the futures market and Bitcoin and what's happening and your choice. If you're in it, we'll give that to you tonight at 5 o'clock. Don't have an answer for you. I can explain it, but I don't know what to do.
It's a complicated world, right? We talk about world crazy economic issues, world strife, sexual harassment.
Yeah.
You know what I do sometimes, Glenn?
Yeah.
Well, when I go home.
Uh-huh.
I did this last night. I like to sometimes just flip on the TV right before bed and watch something funny and mindless, right? Something just that takes my mind off of everything.
Yes.
Many times that turns out to be, for me, Family Guy.
Okay.
You know, I like to do that. Just take my mind off it completely.
Yeah.
However, I'm now starting to believe that I should be considering that time as research time. I mean, I might need to clock in.
Why? What
when
is
I
that?
Watch
what
Family
is...
Guy. We've watched now at least two Family Guy situations in which they predicted specific sexual harassers.
Yes.
Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein.
Yes.
Okay. Listen to this clip from January 2016 from Family Guy.
Every month our savings get smaller and smaller. We really got to figure out a better way to budget for this family's future.
Bitcoin.
What?
I don't know.
Wow.
Family finances are in a bad situation. We need to find a way to plan for this family. Bitcoin. What was the price? $440 a coin when he said that.
So, you know what's weird about this is there's a story today that is out that I have. We'll share it later. The story out today that they think a lot of this is being fueled by people who are like, you know what? I'm never going to get ahead. I'm just going to throw some money into this thing when it was 200,000, 2,000, 5,000. I'm just going to put something in and they're watching their money grow. And that's why this is really taking off. There's something else that you need to know that unless you're an investor, I mean, unless you're somebody who's really paying attention, you probably don't know. A big happening is happening this weekend. And we'll tell you about it coming up in just a minute. All right. So reading this woman who just accused Franken, any doubt in your mind he's going to resign today?
A little bit, because he initially everyone was saying he was going to resign. And then his official Twitter account started responding to reports saying he is with his family right now and no decision has been made. Retract your report. There's a part of me that thinks, like, well, who is one in these situations? I think you can make this argument legitimately. Who is one? Who have been the people who are, I mean, certainly Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump was accused by a bunch of people. Now, I think there's, it was a a political campaign, it's hard to really decipher who's real there and who isn't of the accusers. But he said, nope, never did anything to anybody, and he won.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Franken has sort of admitted parts of this, and people who come out and say, well, I did do some things I'm uncomfortable with, and he was, I can't talk about my motivation, but it only matters how they feel in the situation. And all the weird things he said to try to excuse himself, those people wind up getting fired. People have turned on him and have said, hey, leave. But remember, and you were talking about this with the way the Republicans have reacted to this, and now they're embracing Roy Moore. Roy Moore and Donald Trump, when these accusations started coming out, Republicans did call for them to resign. They did call for them to step down. But neither one of them actually listened. That was the only difference.
Yeah.
And then Republicans, obviously, none of it was principled. It was all because at the time they thought Trump was going to lose. Yeah. So they wanted to be on the right side of that. And then they thought, well, maybe he has a chance. So they came back to him. Roy Moore, same thing. They thought he was going to lose. Now they think he has a chance to come to win, and they're coming back to him.
Yeah, it was political calculations
totally.
That kept them in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I want to say this with an understanding that the Democrats have nothing to lose here and everything to gain. Okay. Throwing the Clintons under the bus costs them nothing now. In fact, I think it might even cause them some glee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, they're mad at Hillary Clinton for losing. They're mad that they put up with all of that crap for so long. And what do they have at the end of it? Nothing. And so I think it's actually, I think people on the left would like to pound the Clintons a little bit. So it doesn't cost them anything. So I want to recognize that first. But I want to show you the game that is being played. In Washington, I think there are people in America that vote Democrat that are sincere about this. In the Atlantic, listen to this. If Democrats demonstrate our party's solidarity with harassed and abused women, something bad will happen to women's rights? Are you kidding me? Is that why there's a slush fund on Capitol Hill to settle sexual harassment claims with taxpayer dollars because of feminism? I've heard this argument in private, too, and it's about protecting power and asking the victims to understand the larger goal of maybe protecting them sometime soon. Well, I have a radical idea. Maybe Democrats can replace politicians who harass and abuse women with someone other than an abuser. There are good men in the world. I married one. I work with many more. Do we really believe our talent pool will dry up and our caucus will be non-existent once we kick out all the creepers? I don't. What if protecting men who harass and abuse women isn't actually good for women? I'm no longer going to defend Bill Clinton, and I'm ashamed I ever did. But I'm not condemning or admonishing Hillary. I think we all make choices that seem right at the time. I don't feel like pummeling her will be with my privilege of hindsight. But there is a rot in the Democratic Party. And it's not just bad men and exhausted women. It's that we chose Bill Clinton over the women. And that original sin lost us the election of what we all assumed would be the first female president of the United States. So true. If Hillary Clinton would have walked away, she would have had credibility. If she would have just said, look, I'm not going to ever deal with this in public. But she walked out of the White House on the day that she found out that she had been lied to. I've always said from the.
I remember you saying it in 1999.
Yeah, or six whatever, or whatever that was. Whenever
that
was they.
Later than that.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because you were. That's right. It was. Because the initial.
Whenever the blue dress came out.
That was 98 or 99.
And he had to go talk to her. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. I said the very next morning, she's blown it. She thinks she's playing a game for president. And she thinks she's going to win, but this will actually be the moment that's decided that she won't win. And here's why. If she would have walked out and done a press conference on the other side of the gates of the White House, with the White House looming in the back, and she says, I want women to hear me. No woman, no wife should ever, ever have to go through what I just went through. Now, I want you to know what happens between me and Mr. Bill Clinton is one thing. And whether we get back together or we break up will be decided by us and us alone. I won't be addressing this anymore. However, we've got a long road back to recovery and I need a break. I need some time away. So I am leaving the White House today. I don't know how long I'll be away. but I'm going to work on our marriage, but I don't know what that means today. But I want to send you a message. One, he's still my president. He's my president. My husband is a different story. And I want you to know, you need to separate those two things in your life. You need to understand, no person should ever be treated this way. That's the last word I'll have on this. She could have been gone for a month. She would have been an icon. She would have been an icon. But she chose the easy way. And then everybody just embraced it. She said, this woman goes on, in my soul searching, I did feel the need, the necessity of this moment in history as a Democrat and as a woman to tweet to Monica Lewinsky, sorry. She clicked like. I think they are going to turn on the Clintons, and they have nothing to do. Remember, this is a party that's tearing itself apart, and what is happening in the Democratic Party is a Tea Party movement in a different sort of way. It is a movement of people who see the party in disarray, see that it's just nothing but a group of old guys that are doing whatever they want and are not listening to the people. The younger generation is like, no, I mean these things. I'm sorry, Gloria Steinem. I actually mean these things. I'm not playing that game anymore because it doesn't work. And they are going to clean out the party because it has, there's no cost to it at this point. They're going to clean this party out, and they are going to become the champion of women. And Republicans, good luck. Good luck. All of the hard work that you have done, where you have stood, it will be taught in school that we're the abusive party. We're the bad guys. That's what's going to be taught to our children and our grandchildren. And it will never be just like it's never taught that it was the GOP that was pushing the civil rights movement. It will never be taught that Republicans stood up against Bill Clinton. I firmly believe we are here in this space today because of what the country decided to do with Bill Clinton, to say character doesn't matter. It does. It just hasn't in the last 20 years. But it's all new again. Wow, character matters. Just at the time that the Republicans, the same old group of dusty old white guys that held on to their power during the Tea Party, they crushed the Tea Party. I think the Democrats are having their own little revolution, and their Tea Party, if you will, is crushing the old establishment. This is the moment that they're going to crush that old establishment, and they're going to come out renewed. We instead reset the old crusty white people. And instead of being a new party, we became the Democratic Party. So my Patriot Supply is there to remind you that things change. We've had so many natural disasters. Can you imagine? I mean, Stu, geez. If we have the same kind of year this year of change next year, what the hell are we facing? I mean, look at the things that have happened this year that you're like, no, that never happened.
Yeah, I mean, and this is not only something you're thinking is possible, it's basically your thesis on the world right now.
It is, though.
And it's just constant change all the time, and we're not going to be able to keep up with it.
Correct. And it's I mean, some of these are going to be hard to get through. It's not easy or complicated. I'm sorry, it's not complicated. It is easy to prepare. It used to be very complex. Now it's not. Self-reliance experts are waiting for you at My Patriot Supply. And they've helped people prepare for emergencies for about 10 years now. Now, I depend on My Patriot Supply for my family's emergency food storage, and you can too. And whether you have a lot of food storage or you haven't even started yet, both of you, you need to take advantage of this offer. 102 serving of food. It's $99. That's 102 breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything that you need for $99. That's less than a dollar per meal. And this is really good stuff. It's all freeze dried. So, and it comes in a, you know, like a kind of a Ziploc thing, and you just add hot water to it and you're set. It's really easy. If there's a hurricane, you just take this, a tub of this stuff, and you just throw it in the back of your car, and you're gone. And you don't have to worry. You might be worried about where are we going to sleep tonight, like the people in Houston did. But you're not having to worry about what are we going to eat? What are we going to feed the family? We don't have the money. Do this right now, please, and prepare. 800-200-7163, 800-200-7163, or order online at preparewithglenn.com. Dependable emergency food storage, 800-200-7163, preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The real question is, if I had to bet, if I was opening a futures market on which dirtbag in Washington is going to be next, at the top of my list is Joe Biden. I mean, Creepy Joe has been creeping people for a long time, and we used to make jokes about it all the time.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look how creepy this is.
One of the ways that these accusations work, too, is that when someone comes out, makes an accusation, people just go back to look at all the things they've said and all the things they've done, and they find creepy moments that weren't related to this. And some of that's happened with even Al Franken. Like, they went back and found in comedy sketches where he did things that were shady, and the people who were with him were like, no, that was part of the bit. It had nothing to do with it being shady, but it looks so bad. With Joe, as soon as somebody accuses him of something, they have so many things on tape where he's
hugging
people too close and in their face and have people on their laps. And
if this, you know, were Bitcoin, I would be putting all my money on a rise in the price of Joe Biden being a poster child in Washington.
Glenn Beck.
Hopefully, as we get to the holidays, you're going to have a little bit of time off. Maybe you get a week of vacation. You're going to be home a lot with the kids. Let me make a recommendation for something you can do right now. Blue Apron. If you've never tried Blue Apron, you might be thinking, I don't know if I can make those recipes. I've seen them. They look amazing, but I don't think I can do them. Well, if I can do them, you can definitely do them, because I have absolutely no level of talent whatsoever in the kitchen. But the point is, you're going to have meals. We're going to be home. You're going to be sitting around together. You know, one of my favorite things to do with the kids is make these Blue Apron meals, because they can help with, you know, bringing out the ingredients and everything else. They think it's fun. Then we sit down and we eat the thing that we made. It's just a fantastic way to feed your family and have some real holiday together time. Check out this week's menu. Get $30 off your free order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/stew. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. It's blueapron.com/stew. blueapron.com/stew. It's a better way to cook.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Two words I can't believe I'm saying them today. Donald Trump delivered. And here's why I can't believe I'm saying this. You know, I've...
Three words, technically. Just want to make that...
Oh, yeah, sorry. Trump delivered. Sorry. I'm not good with math. The reason why I say I can't believe it is, you know, I've said I'm going to call him out when he's wrong. I'm going to call him as I see him. And I'll praise him when he was right. There's no way in hell. I think I'm on record saying there's no way in hell he's going to do any of this with Israel. He did it. He formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and vowed to move the U.S. embassy to the holy city of Jerusalem.
Through all of these years, presidents representing the United States have declined to officially recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. In fact, we have declined to acknowledge any Israeli capital at all. But today we finally acknowledge the obvious, that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. This is nothing more or less than a recognition of reality. It is also the right thing to do. It's something that has to be done.
Okay. All right. That's it's going to end the same way as the Ronald Reagan thing did, either in horrific flames of fire or really good things. Ronald Reagan stepped to the plate and said, this is an evil empire. It needs to be destroyed. That was a pretty brave and bold statement to make and very controversial. This is the same kind of statement. Very brave move. One that he's going to be praised for and vilified for. I'm glad he did it. Now, dash of skepticism. It really means nothing more than the Bear Ears Memorial that Obama set up if he doesn't actually move the embassy. He's got to move the embassy, because otherwise the next president can come in and go, yeah, I don't know what he was crazy. So you got to move the embassy, and you got to move it before he's out of office, which, I mean, God knows, it could be another 6 years. It could be tomorrow. We don't know. So he's got to move the embassy. But as of yesterday, I stand corrected, and I'm happy to have been wrong on this one.
It's Thursday, December 7th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So Stu brought in a book that he was reading and said, you're going to love this. Hitler's American Model. It has Hitler in it. It's got the Nazis. Of course I'm going to love this. The United States and the Making of Nazi Race Law. This is a really important book for several reasons, none of which... because of the person who authored it, a professor at Yale Law, James Whitman. It is a very thoughtful book, a scholarly book, and one that I think he's, and he's probably not overcautious, I'm just too reckless. He makes the point over and over and over and over again. This does not mean the Americans were Nazis or anything else. It just is documenting how much the Nazis loved our racist laws from the Jim Crow days and the progressive era. Not good. James Whitman is with us now, author of Hitler's American Model. How you holding up, James?
Hello.
Yes.
Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. How you holding up?
Oh, pretty well. You know, the book is keeping me busy, I got to say.
Yeah, I bet it is. I would imagine that there's many people on the right that are saying this is nothing but an America bashing book, and those on the left that maybe are in denial, that they don't want to see you expose, you know, FDR for, you know, his, you know, the outdated thinking of that era.
Well, it's certainly true that the book has created some discomfort on the left. There's no doubt about that. You know, although there are people on the far left who have been quite excited about what I have to say in the book. It's true enough, though, that when the Nazis were looking at the U.S. in the early 1930s, my book is only about the early 1930s, it was in an era of substantial Nazi interest in the New Deal administration and an occasional admiration for Franklin Roosevelt. That's absolutely true, and a little bit hard to swallow, obviously, for a lot of Americans now.
Stu, read this is just on page six. Read the thing that you brought in today on page six.
We have now long known the strange fact that the Nazis frequently praised Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal government in the early 1930s. FDR received distinctly favorable treatment in the Nazi press until at least 1936 or 37, lauded as a man who had seized dictatorial powers and embarked on bold experiments in the spirit of the Führer. Similar things were said more broadly about what was sometimes labeled in the 1930s the fascist New Deal. The glossy Berlin Illustrated magazine, seized from a Jewish publisher and converted to a kind of Nazi life magazine, ran heroic photo spreads on Roosevelt, while Nazi rags like Will Empower, the newsletter of the Hitler Youth, described him as a revolutionary who might fail only because he lacked a disciplined party army like our Führer.
So to wow. defend Roosevelt in some regard, this was the new kind of thought that had, you know, come from Germany in the 1800s to America. This idea of a strong state and fascism had not been discredited yet, if you will, like it was under Hitler. So nobody wants to really recognize that, though, James, do they?
you know, I can't speak for anybody else, but the facts are there. I mean, it's important to say that the Nazis were wrong about whether FDR yes. was a fascist, just as they were wrong about a lot of other things.
Correct.
You know, and it's also important to say that Germany, like the U.S., was facing the Great Depression. In some ways, it's not surprising that they came up with some similar programs. Programs that, you know, are now regarded as not very effective, but at the time were the best people could come up with. So, you know, this is not a story of you know, deep blood brotherhood between
Hitler
and Franklin Roosevelt or anything like that.
No,
the other thing you have to emphasize in all of this is that Roosevelt, especially in the early 30s, again, depended entirely on the support of the segregationist Southern Democratic Party.
So here's the thing that, and you do a really good job. I mean, for me, I'm a little more reckless. that's why you're a Yale professor. But you do a good job of all the way through saying this does not mean this. We're not comparing the two, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very thoughtful book. But when you get into the Nuremberg laws, I mean, I have, you know, studied the progressive movement and its entanglement in eugenics. For a long, long time, I was not aware of all of the things that you exposed in the Nuremberg laws. I mean, they really looked at our laws to round up Jews.
Yeah, they sure did. I mean, you know, it's important to emphasize that in the early 30s, so the Nuremberg laws date to 1935, the idea of mass extermination or the Holocaust was not in anybody's head yet. I mean, the Nazis were simply trying to, the Nazis were trying to introduce forms of persecution short of death camps. You really have to remember that. And what the Nuremberg laws involved in particular was the creation of a new form of second-class citizenship for Jews and bans on sex and marriage between Jews and, you know, Aryans, as the Nazis defined them. And in those respects, there were all kinds of interesting things to look at in American law in the period, and they did.
You know, I want to take issue with one thing that you said, or maybe you can clarify, that nobody was thinking about gas chambers yet. In some ways, they were. I mean, George Bernard Shaw is shockingly deeply into this and talks about an actual gas chamber or some way of humanely putting people down that were no longer worth or worthy of the support of the mass of people. And that was in England right after the turn of the century. I mean, there was this idea of let's get rid of people, you know, and let me Theodore Roosevelt, so let me take on a Republican, wrote at some point we're going to be looked at like a crazy cattle rancher who would just let his best stock breed with the worst stock. We don't allow that to happen. Why would we now? And others took it further to extermination.
Yeah, those are appalling quotes. Yeah, it's not that the Nazis, and Hitler in particular, might not in principle have gone along with that sort of thing. But in the early 30s, it wasn't a practical possibility for them.
Right.
You know, they exactly why they eventually turned to the death camps under cover of war, really, in World War II, I mean, is a subject of great debate among historians. I don't address that problem in the book, but
right.
In the early 30s, this just couldn't possibly have been a program they could have gotten through in Germany, and they didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was really one of those things that this is what they believed they could get away with at the time, the leadership. And what is so disturbing about that is one of the reasons they thought they could get away with this part of it, the Nuremberg Laws, was because, hey, here's this other country. They're advanced. They're a top world country, you know, first world country, and they're doing these things. It was something that they could bring with justification of the United States and their policy as a backing to these were sensible laws. People were doing this all over the world.
Yeah, you bet. And not only people, not only another first world country, but the most powerful country in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, when the Nazis tried to understand how the U.S. had risen to the whatever measure of world domination had at the time, they figured it's obviously American racism that's made the country so successful. What else would Nazis conclude?
So there's also a story that you write about that I had no idea. They actually used a judge in New York who was an activist judge who very rightly stood up and talked about the Nazis when a ship came in. However, he kind of overreached his position. But that's kind of what set the Nuremberg laws really in place, is it not?
That sure is. It's a heck of a story, really. Yeah, this was a Jewish judge, a really minor figure in American law. He was actually a magistrate in the Tombs, the detention center in Manhattan.
He was like a night court judge, right?
Night court judge.
Right.
What happened was there had been a riot in which the rioters tore the swastika flag off a Nazi, a German ocean liner and threw it into the Hudson River. The rioters had been arrested. They came before him, and he released them and issued a statement denouncing Nazism, which he had no business doing whatsoever.
Right.
Not what a night court judge is supposed to be doing.
Right.
But this, the Nazis seized on this as an insult, as justification for making the swastika flag at last the sole flag of Germany, and as the reason for promulgating these Nuremberg laws. So the Nuremberg laws were indeed the Nazi response to this, you know, in many ways admirable, but completely legally unjustified opinion delivered by a night court judge.
So James, did that play into, by the way, we're talking to Yale law professor James Whitman, author of the book Hitler's American Model. Did that incident play in at all with the idea that the Jewish community should just remain quiet? Don't cause trouble here in America. Did people see that at the time in the Jewish community at all? Of, oh, crap. I mean, you did the wrong thing, but you said the right thing. And look at the trouble. It's made things worse now in Germany.
Not that I know of. You know, in fact, he became something of a hero, not just in the U.S., but in France. He sailed off to France and was celebrated as a champion of the values of humanity against the threat of Nazism. I don't think people were yet thinking that it was important to keep quiet at that stage in 1935.
What was the thing that, as you're doing your research, you shake your head and you say, I can't believe how wrong we have history, or I can't believe this happened and nobody really knows.
Yeah, well, that was my reaction, I have to say. You know, I didn't expect to find the stuff that I found. But boy, did it turn out that there's a lot of it. In particular, I mean, I started just by, out of curiosity, looking at Mein Kampf, in which one finds the phrase, there is one country that has made progress toward the creation of a healthy race order, and that country was the United States. So Hitler was praising the U.S. already in Mein Kampf. And when you start to track down the legal records in the early 30s, it's all over the place, including we have a stenographic transcript of a planning meeting for the Nuremberg laws. And the meeting begins when the Minister of Justice presents a memorandum on American law, and they discuss what lessons they can learn from the U.S. there.
So, James, why, you know, this is going to make people uncomfortable. I like books and thinking that makes me uncomfortable. It makes me grow, makes me think, and makes me question. Why is this important that we learn this?
First of all, it's just a big part of American and world history. You know, This is no insignificant thing. And it does help us it doesn't help us explain why Hitler happened or anything like that. I mean, I think Hitler would have happened regardless.
Yeah.
But it does help us understand the course of development. And to come back to something you said earlier, it shows that the extent to which, in the early 1930s, creating a race order of that kind was quasi-respectable.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it was.
Which is easy for us to forget. It tells us things about the U.S. too, about the history of American racism. So the Nazis weren't just interested in Jim Crow segregation. It turns out that there was racist law of all kinds, in American immigration law, for example, not all of it directed against blacks. It was a vast national body of law, not just limited to the South, and that's something we've forgotten, too. And that's important to see that. You know, I think it also tells us things about where the dangers lie in the American values and American traditions. The things the Nazis liked so much in the 30s are still with us in some ways, even though segregation is gone. You know, there's no more Jim Crow.
James, thank you very much. It's a great read and something that everybody, I think, should have in their home library, and not something that you're necessarily going to drill down in anyplace else. And I hope this furthers the conversation about who we have been and the mistakes that we've made and how others have capitalized on that.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate the kind words.
You got it. Bye-bye.
It's
too much to cover in this for one interview. Honestly, we should do more of this. The Hitler's American Model. It's by James Q. Whitman. The United States and the Making of Nazi Race Law.
It's terrifying when you get to the Nuremberg trials and you see what they're saying, you know, the quotes that they're talking about us. And you're like, whoa.
And I'd love to hear his point on, you know, whether this is something we should learn about large government. Because whether, you know, whether obviously Republicans have and conservatives have feared this for a while, the power of a large government. But, you know, the left now sees Donald Trump and they don't like him. You know, we've seen some leftists come out and say, wait a minute, we can't give the president all of this power. Again, this is the most extreme example, but that's how you learn, by extreme examples. And, and this
as
is
he
real
said,
based
they,
on us.
As he said, and I tend to disagree with him, I mean, they didn't have an extermination plan or desire when
they
first
desire,
started.
But they didn't think they could get away with it pragmatically at that time. They went as far as they could.
Found a way. That's why you treat government like fire. If you're in control, it's good. If it's in control, it'll burn everything down. Getting a good night's sleep is easier said than done, especially if you hear a noise downstairs. You can check on your kids, you know, every hour. Make sure you sleep with one eye open or you can sleep easy, knowing that you and your family are protected with Simply Safe. Each Simply Safe system is a complete arsenal, and you can order Simply Safe online in minutes. You can have it on your doorstep tomorrow if you wanted. You open up the box, you plug it in, and you're protected with professional home security. No tools, no hard wiring. With Simply Safe, there are no contracts, no hidden fees, just 24/7 professional monitoring for $14.99 a month. So go to simplysafebeck.com, get a special 10% discount when you order today. simplysafebeck.com. That's simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So I got up this morning and Bitcoin had an alert that it was 14.9. When I went to sleep last night, it was fiddling around 12.9. I get up and it was 14.9. Then I take a shower on the way to work and get another alert. It's down to 13.6. Then I get ready to start the show and it was at 14.5 or 14.8. We just checked now and Bitcoin is at
16,937.
It has grown by 20% in the last 24 hours.
30%
in the last 24 hours. Now, this makes me nervous. And there's two ways to look at this. One, it's a bubble and it's growing way too fast. However, this is a global thing. I mean, you know, South Korea is, I mean, everybody's getting into Bitcoin in South Korea. So there's a lot of money going in around the world, but it's still a very little amount of money for the market. However, something happens on Sunday that could make Bitcoin go to 2,000, 8,000, could go to 40 or 80,000. I mean, I don't know. People are saying that, you know, the time to really make money on Bitcoin is over. I'm not so sure. I mean, it might be. It also might go to 100,000 a coin. Because of what happens Sunday and then again a few days later. And we'll explain this. But if you put $100 into Bitcoin, you know what we told you a few months ago, you're having a good day today.
Glenn Beck.
I know.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So, you put money in Bitcoin. And
you know, deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, why are you talking about Bitcoin? You got
to
deal with it.
You got to have to deal with it for a few days.
Because here, you know, you wish you dealt with it back when we were in 2014 and 15 blabbing on about this. And you were like, oh, geez, I'm turning the radio. We have so many people that are it actually makes me feel really good.
It does.
Because, you know, these stupid things. And I know nobody else talks about this. And I know it's nerdville. But it's like people in this audience are making fortunes.
Fortunes.
I mean, and that is really exciting. Again, we're not financial advisors. We don't know. We've said a million times to go to zero tomorrow and we may lose it all. But we've talked to so many regular people who are like, you know what? I had $1,000 to throw in on this, and now I paid off a year worth of college that I would not be able to do. You know, people who have made incredible amounts of money from, you know, that heard us talking about this mm-hmm. and then have looked into it. And it's just, you know, you get a couple of days where you feel
good. So here's the problem. Anybody who put money into it and you look at that now and you go, okay, I was willing to walk away from the money that I put up.
Right. Like you put $1,000 in.
Yeah.
I was willing to walk away from that $1,000.
Am I willing to walk away with from 16? you know,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And so you're kind of like, because I'm in this place now where I'm like, okay, I said, let's just put it in there and we're willing to lose it. Well, you know, pigs get slaughtered.
They do.
I mean, that's a lot of money. Here's what's happening. I would have left my money, and I still have it in there, and I probably will. I would be fine leaving it if the growth had even been as crazy as it had been
over the last year,
from January to November, but from Thanksgiving to today, it's crazy. It's crazy.
You want a nice little illustration? Yeah. First of all, the market cap has passed some of the biggest companies you'd ever hear of, like Home Depot, for example. Bitcoin is considerably larger now than Home Depot. You know, have there been $300 billion companies that have gone bankrupt? Yes. Very few of them. You can count them on two hands at least.
But this really isn't a company.
It's not a company. It's something different.
This is a computer.
It could be something different, right? Yeah. Well, but I mean, it has gone up so much so fast. And, you know, you wonder, is it sustainable? I don't know that it is.
So I printed this last night. Okay. Last night. So Stu, you're going to have to help me because it stops at 14,000. From 0 to 1,000, Bitcoin took 1,789 days. Mm-hmm. From 1,000 to 2,000, 1,271. From 2,000 to 3,000, 23 days. From 3 to 4, 62. 4 to 5, 61. 5 to 6, it took 8 days. 6 to 7, it took 13. 7 to 8, 14. 8 to 9, 9 days. 9 to 10, 2 days. 10 to 11, 1 day. 11 to 12, 6 days. 12 to 13, 17 hours. I printed this last night at like 10 o'clock. 13 to 14, 4 hours. That's where it left off.
Yeah, and since that happened, it's gone up, $3,000 more? I mean, it's right near 17,000 as we speak. Again, it's an incredible thing.
It's nuts.
And yeah, look, is this a bubble? I think probably this part of it, it's not gonna, I mean,
well,
when
let
it
me,
hit 10,000,
I... Let me make a case for both. Here's what could be happening. What could be happening is everybody starting to wake up going, I got to get on that Bitcoin train. Okay, that's the worst possible thing, because then it's definitely a bubble and it will come down. Okay. The second could be on Sunday, they're opening this up for large investors. So for the first time, institutional investors will be able to buy Bitcoin and a futures market begins. Now, we're going to explain this at 5 o'clock today so you understand, but that's basically going to the craps table and you're just betting on the guy rolling the dice. Is he going to roll a six or is he not?
Yeah.
And you're not really rolling the dice. You have nothing in it. You're just betting on that guy's not going to continue to win. So the futures market starts. That generally will push the price of things down, especially because I believe a lot of people with a lot of money are very interested in making sure that Bitcoin is destroyed. So it could mean that Sunday it all is going to fall apart and it's just irrational exuberance right now. But it also could be get in because Sunday is the beginning, the first round of institutional investors, meaning like, you know, I'm just making this one up. The California Teachers Union could say, I'm not getting a good, rate of growth here at all in whatever we're invested in. I'm going to put 1% of this into Bitcoin. This is a good bet. Well, all of that money from these big institutions can pour in beginning Sunday. That could mean that Bitcoin on Sunday, because of the futures market, could go to 8,000, could go to 2,000. It could mean that because of the institutional venture investments, it could go from, at this rate, Sunday it'll be at 25,000 to 50,000 or 100,000 when the institutional investors get in. It's feast or famine.
Yeah, and it's certainly what the we've had people on before that are big believers in this, and they, you know, we're talking about $1 million per Bitcoin, and that sounds ridiculous, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It sounded ridiculous for a long time. Right now, that number is 58. 58 Bitcoins is $1 million. So it's not, it's, you know, what is, like, we're getting to the point where, I mean, it's pretty amazing, right? I mean, like, it used to be, when we started out this year, it was 1,000.
It's just moving so fast.
Bitcoins?
Yeah.
That's 58 to get $1 million. You know, again, this stuff, I don't know how long it lasts. I mean, but still, I've never seen anything like it.
I've never seen anything like this in my life. And I mean, I would imagine that the last time something this dramatic happened was 1929.
But again, like, that's it. Like, the internet bubble people bring up. 1929 is another interesting one,
yep.
Right? Was that a bubble? Both of those were, I don't know. 1929 is a weird one because there's a lot of different things going on. But if you go to the internet bubble, it's a good example. The internet bubble was a bubble. It's also 1/1,000th of what the internet is today.
So if I were a betting man, and clearly I am because I've bought money in Bitcoin. If I were a betting man, here's what I think. I think the institutional investors and everything else, the futures market, is going to, it might drive it up. I don't know what's going to happen when it first goes in, irrational exuberance. I have no idea. But I think it will come down because of the futures market,
mm-hmm.
and it will make it more stable. So let's just say, you know, it goes down to 8,000. Well, then it will be 8,000 and it will slowly build to 9 and slowly build to 10 if it's real. I think, you know, it just like, you know what? Bitcoin may be the pets.com of blockchain, because what you really invest, what's interesting about Bitcoin is blockchain, this idea of currency that is digitized, completely safe,
and
easy to use, and yeah. decentralized.
And it's not just currency. It's all sorts of different things.
Right. So that's what's driving it. Blockchain, if you will, is the internet. The question is Bitcoin pets.com? If you're looking at and you're saying this is a dot-com bubble. The internet didn't go away. Blockchain's not going to go away.
Yeah.
Digital currency won't go away.
I don't think Bitcoin is the pets.com. There are thousands of cryptocurrencies.
That are.
Many of those that are the
yes.
bit.com. But I mean, if you look at, this has happened with Bitcoin in 2014. You know, it rose from nothing to over $1,000 in about 2014. And people are like, this is bubble. It's ridiculous. It was. It went up and irrational exuberance took over for a short period of time, went up to 1,200, 1,300, and it fell back to 200, and it stayed at 200 for a couple of years. When Donald Trump was coming down the escalator, it was $500. Now it's 17,000 almost, or 16,000 and change. The point being, though, just because it has these bubbles does not mean it's going away.
No.
And it may very well crash down tomorrow or in 2 days. It's
and it could very well double. It could very well double. It could double. It could almost double today at the rate it's going.
It's hard to even see the bubble from 2014 in the chart anymore. It's gone up so much.
It's really, I've nothing in my life. Is there anything in your life like this?
No, I mean, it's funny because, you know, and we've seen this with so many people in the audience, and you go your whole life without being part of one of these.
Yeah.
One of these things.
And it's kind of fun.
It's fun. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously you always look back. It's very easy to look back at the negative. People are more, you know, every time we talk about this stuff, I'm like, why didn't I put a lot of money?
Oh,
this?
I know. Jeez, I know. I looked at it today and I was like, oh, you got to be kidding.
It would have been really meaningful.
Yeah.
Right. But it's still, it's fun and whatever amount you put in, you made a lot more than you've put in. And you still, to this day, as we will say over and over again, you shouldn't put in any money you don't mind losing on. You know, Glenn, you put it a nice way of like, well, you know, if you're going to go out for a nice night or a nice weekend out and you can skip one of them, it's worth that much money.
I think it is still worth that much money. Because there's a chance that this still goes up to 100,000, goes up to 1,000,000. You know, I mean, I don't know.
It could.
The question is, do you have the guts? Do you have a number, Stu, that you're like, if it hits this, I am out?
Oh, we've passed like several of those.
I know.
This is what always happens with these things.
I know.
As you've pointed out. One interesting thing, there's an analysis that I was reading recently that said, Bitcoin, is it going to take over the world? I don't know. Maybe not. Probably not, right? Can it become 1%, however, of financial instruments? You know what I mean? Like, obviously, it's be much smaller than gold, for example, which is a mm-hmm. much more stable, realistic thing. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that a million times. Can it be 1%, however, of financial instruments? If it's 1%, the price for Bitcoin is roughly $40,000. So that is something that you look at and you're like, okay, $40,000, 1%, 2%, 3%, are those completely insane? Probably not.
Not.
Right. And then you're talking about real run-ups. I don't think that that's near term stuff, honestly, but I certainly didn't see this either. So I have no idea.
So Stu, if the, let's say the teachers, the California Teachers Union decided to, as an institution, invest 1% of their holdings into Bitcoin. At this point, one giant institution could make a huge impact. Would they not?
Yeah, I mean, it could. It also opens up to, I mean, a run-up like this combined with, like, if a teacher's union gets involved and dump a bunch of money in this, and in 6 months it's half of what it's worth, you will see all sorts of calls for regulation.
Yeah, I think this. I think this is going to be, because stuff like this always leaves wreckage. Do not put money in that you don't have or cannot afford. Do not do that. Don't. This is crazy town. If you have money that you're going to blow on something else, if you and your wife are like, you know what, honey, let's not do Christmas. You know, just you and I, we don't need anything anyway. Let's just take the money that we were going to spend on us and let's put that in Bitcoin. Do that. Don't dump a lot of money into it, because this is unprecedented. And, you know, the tulip thing that happened in the 1500s. Where people were exchanging money, and then somebody's like, you know, I got this nice tulip. And he was like, oh my gosh. Well, I'll give you a farthing for that, whatever that's worth. And all of a sudden it was worth 1,000,000 farthings. It happened in a month. The run-up went up and crashed and wiped people out. And we're still talking about the tulip mania from the 1500s. Don't get swept up into Bitcoin mania. Be smart. You might.
And if you figure out what smart is, tell us.
Tell us. Let us know. What's it at now?
No, I'm just laughing.
I'm addicted to it. That's it. What's it at now?
Guy just writes in, it sucks. I have to wait till after December 29th to invest in Bitcoin. That's my divorce hearing. I want to make sure it's all mine.
All right, I want to talk to you about something that doesn't have bubbles. Goldline. Gold is, you know, there's a huge difference on, you know, when you talk about investing in Bitcoin, Bitcoin is something that could be worth a lot and could be worth zero. So you lose everything. Gold is not like that. It makes me nervous when numbers start to go up really, really fast, especially when, you know, you look at something like, I look at gold, I have a percentage of everything that I have in gold. And the reason why is because I want to make sure that I have something in the end that I can pass to my children if I wanted to. If there was some sort of craziness, I'd still have something of lasting value. I look at that as an insurance policy against crazy things like Bitcoin. Now, Goldline is doing something, while that's going skyrocketing, the price of gold at Goldline is actually going down because they were just purchased by A-Mark, which is the largest precious metal wholesaler in the country. And so this has allowed them to be able to get the wholesale prices, be able to, you know, merge some of the things that they, you know, that A-Mark was already doing, so they could cut their prices. You've never seen prices like this. Ready right now for the holidays. Call Goldline now at 866-GOLDLINE. Take advantage of this unprecedented special that is happening now at Goldline. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-465-3546. Read their important risk information. Find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. It is for me. It is a rock solid investment. 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Everything you need to know tonight at 5 o'clock. We're going to be covering Al Franken's possible resignation. Also, Bitcoin and the futures market. What does that mean exactly? We do that 5 o'clock only on the Blaze TV.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Do you want your six-year-old using Facebook? This week, Facebook launched a new app called Messenger Kids. It's an app for kids to use on their tablets or smartphones, but parents can control it from their Facebook account. Facebook says it's addressing the need for a messaging app designed specifically for kids, but with the level of controls that parents want. Oh. Another app to target my children as young as six. I feel good. Don't worry, Facebook says it has spent months talking to parenting groups, behavioral experts, and families to develop the app. So it's completely safe and even healthy for your child, according to Facebook. Quote, this opens up a whole new world to online communication for families, end quote. Eh, maybe so, but I think it also opens up a whole new world of worms in the American culture. Are we not distracted enough already? We now need our six-year-olds walking around the playground with their nose in a screen? This app just gives kids more technology, you know, another thingamajig to bug mom and dad about. Mom, I just need it for a second. Mom, I just need it for a second. And right before Christmas, too. Thank you, Facebook. Another drawback. It doesn't just provide predators, hackers, and Vladimir Putin with you. It also now hands your children over to them as well. Another point of attack. That's great. Thank you, Facebook. Facebook says there are no ads in the app, and your child's information will not be used. They super promise never to use it for marketing purposes. Uh-huh. But remember, I mean, really, all this is one giant marketing app. It's just marketing Facebook. It's a massive recruiting tool. Facebook wants to hook kids on their social media product for the long term. Now, you have to be 13 to have a regular Facebook account, but now, magically, you can have one at six. Yay! Oh, I want my kids just to be able to have access to all kinds of strangers at 6 years old. Facebook says it's not going to automatically convert Messenger Kids accounts to adult accounts when they turn 13, so they could keep that account if they wanted to until they were 30. Even if this plan works, they won't need to. The kid will already want to be a customer for life of Facebook, unless they've got a creepy reason for hiding their age. Part of me is saying, run! Especially when something is specifically designed to hook my kids. On the other hand, I've been reading a lot about technology and, you know, those of us who say, I just want them to have a normal childhood. That's normal for us. What's normal for the next generation is communicating electronically. It is. 66% of our kids, now 6 through 12, have their own smartphone or tablet. Do we allow our kids to use these kinds of apps to help them to be able to swim with the tide? Is it appropriate? Every new gadget and app raises new questions. But this technology is moving so fast that we don't have time to answer the deep questions before the next development.
It's Thursday, December 7th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I'm reading a book. Let me look it up for sure so I make sure I have the name right. You know, I am so torn. I hate Kindle, and at the same time, I read most of my books on Kindle. I like paper, and I like, you can't, you don't remember things the same way. Anyway, Augmented by Brett King. Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane. And he's talking about kids, and how do we deal with kids in one chapter of the book? How do we deal with our kids, and what should they learn? And, you know, schools are not teaching them anything. And what are the jobs of the future? So I sat down with Rafe the other day, and I said, Rafe, we need to get you into programming and robotics. Robotics are going to be huge in the future. And he has such a gentle personality. He's such a good, good young man. You know, I said, because he's always wanted to be a vet or something. And I said, have you thought about being a nurse or a nurse practitioner? Because a nurse practitioner with robotic experience is a huge area of opportunity for the future. Now, I made the mistake of talking to my 13-year-old son, who is homeschooled part-time, because the very next day, my wife wrote to me and she said, why is our son asking me, for what job in the future, Mom, do I need diagramming sentences? I just told her, I have no idea. I don't know. But I'm mad at whoever set him up on that. You just worry about the things that are happening in the future. I'm mad at them. So our kids, you know, I'm really torn. We have to have them involved in technology because it is not going to be like this when they're our age. Not at all. And his point in this was, if you shelter them from technology, you are going to be, by far, the people in the 80s that were the early adopters on, you know, like Apple 2C, and they started to program and everything else. Those people took off in the 90s and the early 2000s. The ones who were like me, who were like, I don't know anything about a computer and I don't want to learn anything about a computer, I'm doomed. Our kids have to know about electronics now and really know how not just to use them, but to manipulate them and to create them, because that is what everything around them is going to be. But anything involving kids scares the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Facebook Messenger thing you mentioned is scary. They've said they've taken as many, you know, they've tried to eliminate all these problems. They've talked about that. You have to, I think, approve anyone from the parents' Facebook page that you allow on with your kids, mm-hmm. which is, you know, certainly a big firewall.
Yeah.
But you never know. These things are going to happen. I mean, YouTube Kids is an interesting part of this. Have you followed this sort of controversy that's gone on the past few months?
No. By the way, hang on just a second. Mm-hmm. You know, you might say that there's a firewall and you're protecting your kids. Remember, they're not using the information. They'll never sell it or use it for advertising. But they are mapping who your kid is from 6 to 13. And Facebook will have your entire child's history. That's significant. Having a 6-year period where they've poured themselves out into Facebook. They have all that information to market later. Anyway, go ahead.
It's true. YouTube, obviously everybody knows. YouTube is great. Look, what an incredible service YouTube is.
It's great.
It's free video. You can find almost anything. And just like anything else with capitalism, and the internet is a microcosm of capitalism, there's good and there is bad there, right? Like, there's mm-hmm. incredible information. You can take classes from MIT, and you could do
it's
things.
It's amazing.
More incredible. And the upside
yep.
Overwhelmingly
yes, positive.
Outdoes the downside yep. to me. But, I mean, of course, it's also a home of ridiculous conspiracy theories. It's a home
yes.
of people just getting in fights and hurting each other that people watch for entertainment. There's so much. There's a lot of crap on there, too. So YouTube decided to form a YouTube Kids app. One of the reasons they did this is because what was happening is mom and dad, like, hey, I need you to, you know, I need to put the kids down for 5 minutes in front of the TV. You know, go watch this Disney video or whatever mm-hmm. silly video is on there. What would happen was the algorithm over time, they could click on other things, maybe something the parent had watched earlier, mm-hmm. right? So they watched something a little edgier with swears and everything, and that kids would click on that when their video was done, and it would bring kids into an adult world, which is not what the intention was. So they created YouTube Kids basically to keep all of the adult stuff out. There's only a certain amount of videos that get in to YouTube Kids. I think generally speaking, a good idea.
Good idea.
So what happened was there's a lot of freaking weirdos in the world. A lot of freaking weirdos in the world. And what they were doing is taking beloved children's characters.
Oh, I have seen this.
And having them do really twisted, weird things. People would dress up as princesses and punch people in the face. They would show, you know, Elsa goes to the dentist and she would be tortured by the dentist in the dentist chair. A clown turns creepy and throws a kid in a washing machine. Like, and people animate really crude animation where it would be fine for a while and then turn really weird and twisted and wrong. There's a lot of different things.
This is the problem with, there's no brand. Tell me the brand you trust. Tell me the brand that you could put your kids in front of and just walk away.
Yeah, it's harder and harder to find those, right?
Disney Channel used to be that way. I don't trust the Disney Channel. I haven't trusted the Disney Channel. I mean, I'm a long time, you know, advocate of Disney has gone off the rails. Mm-hmm. I don't trust the Disney Channel. I don't trust Nickelodeon. I don't trust certainly MTV or any of its networks like Nickelodeon. What can you put your kids in front of and just walk away? There's no brand anymore.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, like, you know, for example, one of my favorite programs I've brought up before, Peppa Pig. Now, Peppa Pig is this little English pig, and generally,
there's a lot of those twisted Peppa Pig stuff.
A lot of it is because it's very crude animation. So people recreate the animation and are able to have Peppa Pig do all sorts of terrible things. And, you know, YouTube has billions of videos they're going through. They're treated with algorithms. I honestly think they do the best that they can to try to get these things to be right. But what they find is weird things get popular. And weird things get clicked on, and the algorithm says kids like them, and then they become more and more popular. Now, because of this pushback, YouTube has really now cracked down over the past month and tried to get rid of these, but it's an impossible program. How can you possibly eliminate them? People just post the same videos under different names from hundreds of different users. Yep. There's no way. Some of these accounts had millions and millions of subscribers, and they were just, you know, violent videos with kids in them, kids bloodied faces because they would get hit, and it was all acting, wasn't it? You know, these kids weren't necessarily actually being hurt, thank God. But what is that? And so, you know, there have been reports of people who believe that this is conditioning from weirdo adults. It's trying to get them to look at these things because it pleases the adults, and you see adults in the comments, you know, cheering this on and making all sorts of creepy comments. And this is a kids program. So you basically can't, right? I mean, obviously as parents, we would all sit back and say, it's a terrible idea to sit your kid in front of an iPad and have them click around while you're not standing right behind them, right? We all know that that's bad, but the reality of the world is sometimes the kitchen's on fire. Sometimes there's an emergency. Sometimes you're on the phone with your insurance company and you can't have your kids yelling at each other while you're doing it, you know, and it's really hard. And so one of the reasons it's interesting that people bash TV and putting your kid in front of a TV, it's becoming much more of the safe space where you throw on, Nick Jr. or you might get kind of edgy content there. Some stuff you don't like. Your complaints with Disney, but your complaints with the Disney Channel are nothing compared to what these kids can stumble in on.
No,
with some random
Disney
guy in Croatia making a video for them.
Disney Channel I would put on so much faster than just handing them the device and saying, yeah, just go look on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, but they don't watch television.
Yeah, they like
my son. Getting my son to watch a television show now is just like easy. He gets bored with it. And he's like, I don't know. What? He does. They don't watch him that way. He'll watch for. It's bizarre. You know the thing with the kids, the little kids, the people who open toys.
Oh, the unboxing stuff. Oh gosh,
that is weird as hell.
And that stuff, even though it's safe for kids largely, creates weird things in them. I mean, like, you know, one of the videos, some of my kids would watch occasional videos of these little kids that review toys. They get these cool toys. They say they play with them in front of the camera.
Yeah.
It's totally innocent, largely.
Yeah.
But like the kids get the impression that there are other kids out there getting tons of toys sent to them every day to play with. Brand new toys, dozens of toys a week that they get.
Wow.
And they are like, well, wait a minute. But Ryan gets those toys. You know, Ryan's some kid, some, you know, these, there's one video in particular, Ryan's Toys Reviews is a very famous one, which no knock on Ryan if he happens to be listening as a 6-year-old or whatever he is. But it's like, we've stopped letting
Ryan, Stu hates you.
I mean, the family, I think, is a good family. They like their kid. They've made this cool. There's nothing wrong with this. But like, they had a video, and I swear they have some deal with McDonald's in which Ryan is seemingly constantly eating McDonald's in these videos. Which, whatever. I have no problem with capitalism like this. You know what? If it was a popular channel, cool kid, this is a good brand for McDonald's to associate itself. I love McDonald's as a kid, with or without commercials,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan takes his little car. He has one of those battery-powered mm-hmm. cars. And his parents play like McDonald's with him. It'll pull up to the window and the window of their house, and it'll put out McDonald's, and he'll drive away with it. And at one point, they made a video about how Ryan was going to drive to McDonald's on his own, right? And when that happened, my kids kept asking me, when are we going to be able to drive to McDonald's on our own? The answer is 16 years old, okay? But it's putting weird priorities, right? The same way we, I think, as adults, see other people with their Facebook page and how wonderful their family is and there's never any problems.
Yes, yes,
kids
yes,
see yes, this. Wait a minute. What are you saying? You're saying no to me at Toys R Us? I never see anyone say no at Toys R Us. They get everything they want. Why don't I get it?
So my son is kind of going through the same thing on one of the things that he for a while said he wanted to be. And I was like, no, was a gamer, but a reviewer of games. And I'm like, no. If you want to do that on the side and it becomes huge, great. But you're no.
When you're
no.
an adult.
When you're an adult, mm-hmm. you can mm-hmm. think of that. When I'm dead and I don't have to worry about you anymore, fine. But they watch these, and it starts with the kids watching, you know, opening up packages and stuff. They watch people playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't understand. Why don't you just play them?
Yeah, I just don't get it. Why don't you go outside and play in the fresh air, you freak? All right, just had to get that out. Which reminds me, Pat Gray is coming up in just a minute. Your mortgage rate depends on many factors like the global economy, the loan that you choose, how many points you pay, other variables that can add cost to the property or the type of home, whether or not it's your primary property. You need somebody who is telling you all this stuff before you go and make a bid on a house. You need to get a pre-approval from somebody. And if you're a veteran, haven't used your VA benefits with interest rates this low, now is the time to get into a new home or to refinance. And I would say that with anybody. If you have a variable mortgage, if you can refi, do it right now. American Financing, these guys work for you. They don't work for the banks. They find the right loan for you. American Financing is available online at AmericanFinancing.net, AmericanFinancing.net, or you can call 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. If you're looking to refinance or buy a new home, there's one place that I would recommend you start when you're looking for a mortgage, and that is AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Okay. All right.
Never seen anything like this.
This is nuts. Doc was just coming in to say that it was up to, what was it, 1,600?
And then 16,000, and he was said 7.
16,000, yeah. And then he was standing there, and as he was waiting for the commercial break, he said it went up to 17. When he came in, he said it's 18,600. And now it's what, 19,387 for Bitcoin. This is nuts.
I mean, there's a very large split between, just to, so I know you don't care maybe about this if you're not into the Bitcoin thing, but the sort of the name brand exchange that most people are aware of is Coinbase. It's the largest in the United States. And there's a large split between the prices on that exchange and some of the other, let's say, more nerdy exchanges, right? If you're a nerd, you're on one of these lesser, different, it doesn't have many members, and you can buy Bitcoin a lot cheaper there than you can on Coinbase, which strikes me as like maybe there's a lot of brand new people coming in and going to the name brand exchange, and that price is a lot higher. Bottom line is, I mean, this, I've never seen anything like this. When you said you woke up, what was the price when you woke up?
It was like 13. It was like 14,800, and then it went down to 13,600, and then by the time we went on the air, I don't remember what it was. 15, and now it's 19,200. I mean, what? $6,000 increase in 3 hours? That might be a signal it's a bubble. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I think Stu is just staring at the screen, just... Refreshing. Is it up to 42,000 yet? Bitcoin?
It's $1 billion right now. It just crossed the $1 billion threshold. No, I'm just trying to figure out. There's so many weird quirks in it right now that I don't understand. This is why, you know, maybe leave the investing to investors. But it's
weird.
It's an amazing thing to watch. And we can, the main point of data that most people are trying to follow when they're trying to figure out, do I buy or do I sell, is has Pat Gray bought in yet? And can we get an update on that, Pat?
I have not.
Okay, good.
I have not. You're still good. You're still good.
Still good. Okay.
We assume this will skyrocket until the day Pat puts one penny into mm-hmm. it. And then it's
over.
Crash.
Then it's over.
We are getting ready for a press conference with Al Franken in just a few minutes. He's expected to be leaving the Democratic Party. I think the Democratic Party, as I said earlier today, if you missed it, are cleaning house, and they are going to put themselves on a sure footing of being the right and righteous party that stands for principles and morals and women.
We got rid of Al Franken Groper. We got rid of John Conyers. And now you elect Roy Moore?
Yeah.
A child abuser?
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
You defend Donald Trump? I mean, that is what's going to happen. And it is, as I said earlier today, it's the 1960s and 70s all over again. It's when the Democrats, who were fighting against the civil rights movement, the Republicans were the ones who pushed it all through. New Democrats came in. They seized that. Those old Democrats switched parties, went over to the GOP, and the GOP has lost ever since.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Because at the very last moment, they lost their way.
Yeah, if you think that 30 Democrats yesterday all of a sudden decided, hey, you know what? He is a bad guy, and I think he should resign. I think that was so calculated. I think they got together and decided we're going to start slowly, and then it'll build through the day, and it'll look like this just caught momentum.
Oh, completely,
they didn't,
right?
They didn't give a rat's anus about the Bill Clinton stuff. They couldn't have cared less about...
I do believe the farther you get away from Washington, and you got to kind of be in the center of the country, because you can't be too close to Hollywood and you can't mm-hmm. be too close to Washington. I do believe there are Democrats that are now saying, you know what? I'm glad I don't have to carry that water anymore. It was wrong. It was wrong. And I don't want to do it anymore. I think there are those that are sincere that are coming out and saying, you know what? We should have listened to Juanita Brumbry.
Yeah, but those aren't the Nancy Pelosi's of
the world. No.
Oh, but there's a window, right, for real in Washington type Democrats. There's an interesting window between the Roy Moore election and the week before, when they need every vote they can get on the tax bill. Stunningly, The outrage on Al Franken came right in between those two events,
mm-hmm.
where you could say, wow, we got the vote from Franken that we wanted in case the tax bill was going to get overturned and they needed every vote. And on the other side, they get to claim the high ground before the Roy Moore election. Now, some cynical people might think.
That's not you, though.
No. Yeah. I believe everything Democrats say, of course.
But, and Republicans,
because they're all wonderful.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that perhaps this was time. Perhaps
some
this was time
cynical
to
people,
here.
Some cynical people might say that they're only getting rid of Bill Clinton at this point, and they're going to turn on him because it doesn't cost them anything now. They were tired of taking it from the Clintons. They're mad at Hillary. There's nothing they're going to get from them anymore. So now they can say, well, we can turn on him now and just say the truth because it's not going to cost us anything. But those are only cynical people.
Only cynical people would do something like that.
The other frightening part of this is, other than the gathering storm for Roy Moore and Trump, is the legislation they're yelling about, that we need stricter sexual harassment laws. Does anybody have any confidence that these people can legislate that properly?
No.
I have all the confidence in the world that 90% of men are going to be in prison after that legislation is crafted.
Yeah.
Either that, or it just stops all interaction between men and women.
Well, that's okay, because we will have virtual sex with computers.
There you go.
I mean, if this isn't the perfect...
I mean, doesn't that set up the perfect storm for that?
If you wanted to write a sci-fi book, mm-hmm. and the deal was that the global warming people... And I'm not suggesting this is happening at all. But if you're writing a sci-fi book, the global warming people say there's just too many people on the planet. So what they needed to do was to turn men and women against each other so they wouldn't want... They were so afraid to have sex... At the same time, bring in AI and robotic sex and virtual sex, and that way we can wipe the planet out. It's not being planned that way, but it's almost like looking at Planned Parenthood and saying, no, talk about family planning, even though we really just want to get rid of all the black people and the retarded people.
Yeah.
That happened. That really happened.
They were using those mm-hmm. words.
Right.
And worse.
Right.
Particularly when it comes to blacks, they went a lot further than that.
Right. And that was their plan, and they cloaked it. I mean, you could write a great science fiction book right now on cloaking that. Who's gonna put up with the chance of somebody being, that I lose my job because I talk to you? No. I'll just talk to an avatar. And you know what? Women and men will change their names and their appearance as an avatar, and you will relate in the virtual world, and you might be sleeping with your secretary, but you may not have any idea that that's your secretary. I mean, it's you know, do you like pina coladas? It's kind of like that. You're not just meeting on the beach. You know, you're in a virtual sex room, and she's somebody else, and you're somebody else, and you don't know it, but you're having fun, but... This is all safe sex.
Such a happy ending to that song, too, where the two people who are out there advertising
laugh.
To cheat
oh
on each
gosh.
Other
you
just
two?
Want to pay. Oh, wow. You too. Well,
neither
we both
are
like
angry. They're just both happy.
No,
yeah,
you know what?
Took
it's great.
Out ads
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's you.
You. What did we say we liked pina coladas before this?
Yeah, that was the big issue. Was
wow.
The pineapple and coconut combination is something we should have discussed more frequently in our marriage.
Pat, will you hang out for just a few minutes because we want to take this live Al Franken thing. So hang on, because I'm sure you might have some things to say before your broadcast on the Blaze Radio Network. Uber has disclosed a breach of 57 million passengers and drivers' records. The hackers accessed the personal information, the names and the driver's license of the drivers, and the names, email addresses, and phone numbers of the passengers. That's a lot. Have you been in Uber in the last year? Because they have your information. That's on the dark web now. If you're only monitoring your credit, your identity, it can still be stolen in several ways that you're not going to detect. Like, did you know if you were riding an Uber? LifeLock watches this stuff for you. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, threats that you may miss if you're just monitoring your credit, like somebody actually taking all of your 401k or committing a crime in your name. And if there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist will work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more of the threats to your identity. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. That's promo code Beck. Beck will get you 10% off your LifeLock membership. Promo code Beck at 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Al Franken is late to the microphone, but I mean, I wouldn't be rushing to the microphone either if I were Al Franken. He's going to speak today amid calls of resignation. We'll see. Imagine. I mean, he went from a trash, nothing Stuart Smalley to, you know, a joke to a senator that people.
Joke of the talk show host.
And then as a senator, where he kind of had some respect, and, you know, people even on the left are saying he's not as bad as I thought he would be. And he, you know, supposedly behaved himself and didn't make it into a circus. And now he's going back to a joke. Nothing. In fact, worse.
Yeah. I mean, there's two ways to go here with this, right? You can, and the reports are that he is going to resign is the latest that has come out. That's what people have been expecting for a day or so since he said he was going to announce something. But they pushed back on that, the Franken people.
Yeah, he denied it.
Yeah, he denied that it was happening, and he said they haven't made a final decision yet. So there's two ways to go on this. You can either resign and say, look, you know, it's important that we focus on these issues. And I've made some mistakes, though much of it is not true. But I'm going to resign and work on stuff. And maybe in a couple of years, this blows over. You get a lobbyist job for $1 million. It's, you know, hey, not, life isn't too bad. The other way to go is the people of Minnesota elected me. I'm here. I didn't do these things. And I'm going to stay here until either they vote me out or you guys kick me out. But the bottom line is I didn't do the things the way they're described, and I'm not going to let my reputation get hammered like this.
So he's not, this is not a press conference, by the way. This is him speaking on the floor of the Senate. And he has just entered the Senate chamber, but he's not up at the microphone yet. You know, the only reason why you would say, you know what, I didn't do it and I'm sticking it out is because you would think that the party would support you.
But this stuff blows over. We've seen it. They didn't support Trump after the Access Hollywood take.
No. I mean, if they didn't long term, you know, the Democrats, I believe the Democrats have made a calculated choice to say we're standing. This is our spot right here. Mm-hmm. Plant our flag in this.
And they threw Conyers and Franken under the bus.
And they were like, go ahead, take your chances. But I have to tell you, this is the flag we're planting. And I can't tell you that we're not going to call for your Senate hearing may not go the way you think it will.
It may not. But I mean, again, you've seen parties do this many, many times. Republicans did it with Roy Moore as well. They all bailed on him a few weeks ago, and now they're all back in the fray. Same thing with the guy who, the night before the election, like, beat up a reporter, and it was on the audio tape. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a big deal. And they completely forgot about it. Like, the Republicans now have embraced him. I mean, and sometimes it's longer term. I mean,
oh, here we go. Here he is.
Alan?
Go ahead.
All right, Alan, this country, we were finally beginning to listen to women about the ways in which men's actions affect them. The moment was long overdue. I was excited for that conversation and hopeful that it would result in real change.
It started with Harvey
Weinstein.
That
made life better for women all across the country and in every part of our society. Then the conversation turned to me. Over the last few weeks, a number of women have come forward to talk about how they felt my actions had affected them. I was shocked. I was upset. But in responding to their claims, I also wanted to be respectful of that broader conversation, because all women deserve to be heard and their experiences taken seriously. I think that was the right thing to do. I also think it gave some people the false impression that I was admitting to doing things that, in fact, I haven't
done.
Holy
cow, is he not resigning? Mm.
Some of the allegations against me are simply not true. Others I remember very differently. I said at the outset that the Ethics Committee was the right venue for these allegations to be heard and investigated and evaluated on their merits, that I was prepared to cooperate fully, and that I was confident in the outcome. You know, an important part of the conversation we've been having the last few months has been about how men abuse their power and privilege to hurt women. I am proud that during my time in the Senate, I have used my power to be a champion of women.
Here comes a resume.
And that I have earned a reputation as someone who respects the women I work alongside every day.
He's going to be alone.
I know there's been a very different picture of me painted over the last few weeks, but I know who I really am.
He's going to turn it around here and say,
Serving in the United States Senate has been the great honor of my life. I know
I keep
in my
going
heart
back and forth.
That
it's like Bitcoin.
Nothing I have done nothing has brought this honor on this institution. And I am confident that the Ethics Committee would agree. Nevertheless, today I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate. I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office.
This is the hell.
And a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls.
Here you go.
Yep.
Campaigns for the Senate.
All part of the plan.
With the full support of his party.
Mm. Wow.
But this decision is not about me. It's about the people of Minnesota. And it's become clear that I can't both pursue the Ethics Committee process and at the same time.
Okay, so we got it. So he is resigning. But I think the deal is you resign, we'll help you be a champion to be able to speak out and say, take responsibility, boys.
Yep.
And so you can
help us bring down Moore, help us bring down Trump.
Yep.
And that process just started right there.
And we'll hook you up with, you'll be at the Center for American Progress as a fellow and you'll be, you know,
you're going to be fine. Just go. Cause this is the move of the party. The GOP has massive decisions in front of them. They're never good at those. They always choose wrong. They have massive decisions in front of them, but they are about to be left into the dustbin of history. And they're being outmaneuvered right now. I mean, you want to just talk about this just politically. This is a very shrewd political political move. And again, I go back to it is the way the Republicans fought the whole time for civil rights. And now they're remembered as racist because the parties moved at the very last minute. And no matter what the Republicans had done since the 1860s, it didn't matter anymore. This is why principles matter.
Glenn Beck.